Greetings all. Welcome back to the Powerhouse Perspective, empowering leaders for business breakthroughs. If you haven't joined us before, I'm Scott Medeiros, the president of HelmWise, and this is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood Family of Companies. And often during our podcast, we talk about different aspects of leadership, of helping teams overcome challenges, of planning your business and guiding it to the appropriate destination or journey or waypoint. There's a lot of different terms that we use, but we tend to use more of a sea metaphor. So you'll hear us reference captains, which are the leader of an organization. We'll hear us reference ships, which is really the business itself. We'll talk about the state of the sea, which is the business environment. So we kind of use a sea metaphor as we discuss a lot of our topics. So as we bring those in today, just be aware of that. But what the topic we're going to discuss today is really based off of an experience we had recently, or I had recently, at one of our cohorts. So we do these cohorts periodically. And one of the things that we teach during our cohorts is a way in which a captain, a leader, can orient and align themselves in their organization as they embark on the next destination, the next journey, the next BHAG, if you want to say that, the next goal in the organization. So that's part of what we call the Orient, Align, and Reckoning process, or OAR, or again, another C metaphor. And as part of that discussion in the most recent cohort, one of the questions that we ask ourselves is whether or not that the captain and the ship are a match for the journey. So is the leader the right leader for that particular business at that particular place in its journey? So Chandler, that was kind of what led me to think about this. There's lots of different facets to this particular discussion. It goes everything around the captain themselves. It has to do with state of the sea, has to do with what we call white caps. So in general, what are the things that you as a CEO would be looking for in your leaders as you try to figure out if the right person is for that particular ship at the right time?
I think humility is where we start.
Okay, so go to our core four.
Core four for sure, which starts with the captain. The core four being humility, sacrifice, stewardship, and then legacy. What do they want to leave behind? And so you can pretty much guarantee, unless you have an extremely well-refined crystal ball, that things aren't going to work the way you plan, and the, you know, you'll set a journey, you'll try to get your ship, your business, you know, where it needs to be. You'll pick a leader that looks like a great fit at the moment based off of that journey, and inevitably the sea state will change.
Right.
And so regardless of whether you are deciding at that point to potentially ask the leader to step aside or the leader to supplement themselves with people who have talents that are different than the leader, which would be an option for sure, you must ask yourself whether the leader is humble enough and self-reflects often enough to actually change the way they're leading.
Right.
If they won't change, you better have a very high confidence in your ability to predict the future state and the journey that'll take to get there. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for something that we have certainly made mistakes on in the past of, it's a great leader, they certainly can run this business. If it goes from A to B to C to D, that will be wonderful. And as soon as that gets interrupted, you know, the real challenge is, do they self-reflect? Do they pivot? Which is a kind of a dangerous word, but it is constantly, are you going to reorient, realign, and then, you know, pick a new direction that matches the sea state you're in? So that's one of the unpredictable. I think your question maybe is, when we talk about white caps here, we're talking about moving through phases of business. So you've moved from, you know, a startup to kind of a growth, and then you move from growth to potentially either rapid growth or to maturity, and whether that captain is the right captain for that season of the business itself.
Correct.
And
correct.
Again, if you're not willing to reassess yourself, sacrifice, in my opinion, some leadership, so delegate to some other leaders that can supplement you, or potentially take yourself out of the captain's seat because you have the stewardship that views the business as something you're entrusted to move forward along with the employees, which are the crew, the odds of them letting go are very low. and the odds of them making a material change are probably very low as well. And so,
yeah, I think the situation we're in at the Rosewood family of companies is a bit unique, right? Because you as the CEO across our six operating companies, you're trying to judge whether or not wherever that business is in its C state or going through its white caps, you know, is that leader the right person at that time in the journey? Versus a person who doesn't have a family of companies, they are the sole individual of that sole ship that they're leading, perhaps as you were when you were leading ProVantage. And now it takes that self-reflection. So you've got one who can help guide you, kind of using the Helmwise metaphor of guidance and wisdom. But in many cases, if you're that small entrepreneur, if you're leading that small business, even that medium business, it may just be you. And so that self-reflection piece becomes very, very important. How can a captain prepare themselves for that, right? Is that, should they be reading? Should they get a mentor? Should they belong to a group like Vistage or C12? How can they get some of that knowledge to understand that they may not be the right captain at the next stage of the journey for that ship?
I would say that, at least anecdotally, the information I've read, which I haven't, you know, done a full deep dive, so I can't speak to how accurate it is most successful entrepreneurs and leaders are pretty prolific learners.
Okay.
They're out learning, whether that is through mentors, coaching, reading, going to, training sessions, industry, that they are trying to stay at least head up often enough to see what's coming down the road. And if you stay head down, that will work, again, to a certain size. But once you get to a big enough organization, head down is not possible anymore. Mm-hmm. Because you have to then start delegating out, you hire other leaders. So you must come head up sometimes. So to me, it's certainly a mix of a lot of different factors. But I usually look at it as, if we're going to go through the inevitable dip to get to the other side, how long is it going to be? What are we going to encounter potentially there? How deep is that valley before you get to the next peak? And then are you willing as the leader to sacrifice? Because even if you remain the CEO, it's your only company. You still must sacrifice some of your authority to people that are better than you. You must sacrifice some of your ideas to people that have better ideas than you have. Are you willing to do it? And a lot of times you see it, especially with inventors. I've seen it in the software tech space, because they're kind of inventors as well. They get so wed to the exact product or service that they want to offer and the way it started or the way it was, that they refuse to change. And the sea conditions have changed. They don't bring on people. You know, you were correct almost every time until you got to this size. And now you're in a ship that is bigger and in waters you've never been in.
Correct.
And so, yes, you may be an expert near shore or inshore. Now you're going in the open ocean. Some translates, but for sure you better get a person, even if you still own the vessel and run the vessel, your first mate better be familiar with navigating the open ocean, or you're in big trouble. And again, that takes some willingness to delegate not just instruction, but authority and be willing to learn from other people. And so I see that fairly often as the things change. They won't. So the hardheadedness that gets them there, that is certainly can sink them. That happens in employees fleeting up. It happens as the leader of a business, captain of a ship.
And actually, when I was thinking about that particular question as part of our pieces of eight, you know, are the captain, you know, in the ship a match for this next stage of the journey? One could look at that question and say, well, if I'm not a match, then I'm out of the company. Well, that's not what we're saying at all, right? You're still going to be the leader, the owner of the company. But to your point, you're going to have that insight to say, for this particular part of the journey, I may need to put someone else, not necessarily in charge, but someone else who's going to be more the guiding force to the organization. We've spoke about this before, where we've got people even within our family of companies. Some people are really good in the startup phase, really good in that kind of chaos and organizing things and moving quickly, and there's not a whole lot of process, and so they're very nimble, and they kind of like that environment. But we also know that as an organization scales, you got to start bringing in some frameworks and some processes, and that starts to confine some people. At least they feel confined. But you have others who work very, very well in that sort of keep the lights on, keep things moving, keep the execution, continue to drive quality. And then you have others who, when we start that next dip, they're not prepared. They don't have the creativity to say, hey, how do we get ourselves out of this next little trough that we're in? Because they're so used to just doing things the same way all the time. And so even though there are three different pieces to that journey, you can have different members of your organization being the lead while you still maintain overall control.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, maybe you misspoke, but you called it three different parts. I would call it definitely four, because
okay.
even the attributes of a startup versus a turnaround are very different.
Great
because
point.
You
yeah.
have existing systems, existing knowledge, existing process, existing employees that are on board. How do you quickly pivot without throwing, I can't stand this little saying, but throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to adjust to what's going on, but you can't lose what made it great. And that's a different skill set, I think, than a startup can be lean and mean, creative,
right.
Moving super fast. You do that when you're moving through a phase that's more mature in the business, and you may just tear the foundation of the business right out from under it. And we have certainly seen clients that we do work with effectively do that. They bring in a completely new regime. I'm going to take this next down.
Right.
We're going to go to the next
right.
level. We're
right.
changing everything. And then that, again, is some self-respect of, or not self-respect, by the wrong word. That is not respecting the shoulders you stood on to get there. That is,
correct.
I'm going to tear down
correct.
Everything that the leaders, three leaders back did is irrelevant because it's a new day.
Correct.
That is, as I've spoken a few times, that's either extreme arrogance or extreme ignorance, but I don't think it's wisdom. So it's a different phase for sure. Startup is rough and tumble. We're going to break it, fix it, break it, fix it. You're going to do a lot of that in the turnaround, but you can't rip it out and start anew. If you do, you got to realize you actually just went all the way back to basically the startup phase.
Yeah.
And so that's a little different, but it's a tough spot. I mean, the reality, though, is you don't have to know all the answers. And when you get wise enough to figure that out, you have a much better chance. I think the other thing that I would bring up, and you can speak to this, when you go to that chasm, even if you were going to get the people around you to help you succeed, they bring to the table maybe knowledge you don't have or expertise, whether it be the coach or the peer groups or whatever it is, that season may also be miserable for you.
Right. Yes.
And so that's one that I have encountered a few times talking with other leaders is, you know, I used to love my job. I used to love running this business. Well, the business is its own entity, its own thing. It is moving through its cycle. If that cycle is not aligned with the cycle you love doing, then you have another choice. Even if you can do it well, are you going to weather that season, understanding that it's going through this cycle of growth and may get back to, you know, a big enough organization where there's lots of teams and you're back to creating excitement among the leaders of the team, so you kind of get back to the beginning,
mm-hmm.
or are you going to bring down the morale and the necessary enjoyment and excitement during the phase you actually don't enjoy at all, which is kind of the natural. It's no different than working out, exercise, diet. Things you have to do to get to the other side are going to be a lot of things you don't like doing. And I think we start a business with a passion and an excitement and an idea or a service that you seek and scale. And then at some point it becomes its own entity, its own
right.
thing, its own ship. And now what do you do with it? And that's where the stewardship and the legacy come in of, are you going to steward that responsibly? And are you going to think about the legacy it leaves for society, the other people on the boat, your crew, so your employees,
mm-hmm.
and for other business leaders? They're watching too to see what you do.
Mm-hmm. And so as I was thinking about that, you know, so here you are the captain. And in some cases, if you're the entrepreneur who started that business and you're going through these different parts of the white caps, in many cases, you don't know what you don't know. There are parts of the journey you haven't experienced yet. And with that, we generally think of a business starting out and growing. It gets to a maturity, and then from there, perhaps it declines a little bit later on. But the reality is the C state, as you mentioned, is very dynamic and the economic conditions are very dynamic. And so there could be this expansion followed by a contraction, mm-hmm. followed by another expansion or a contraction, expansion, contraction. You've got these different scenarios of which each one is different. So even though you think back to 2008, 2012, maybe even through the pandemic and leading the Rosewood family of companies, even though they were upturns and downturns, each one was different, right? So even though you've been through it once, you can't assume that when you get yourself into another similar situation, that the same tactic that rescued you last time will rescue you this time. So how do you evaluate, you know, where, how much left pedal or right pedal, we call it in aviation, you need to get to keep the ship aligned, right? Is it rallying your advisors, or is it more, like you said, the constant learning? What have you found really helped you get through some tough times?
Yeah, I think that this builds directly upon our last episode of the podcast, is what level do you need that consistency? And so the more, you must understand, the rougher it gets, the more you've got to get head up and try to see what's coming so you can respond. Keep the fundamentals going, but the reality is you can't stick your head in the sand, as everyone's heard, right, and hope that you make it. Like, that's not going to happen. And right. So arrogance can make you overly confident going into a storm, but you know, I would think that aviation is actually a perfect analogy of when you've flown through storms. I know you've flown through typhoons. You've got the crazy pilots that fly the C-130s into hurricanes, Coast Guard pilots that constantly fly
Absolutely.
In crazy weather.
Absolutely.
So what have you seen, I guess, in the military training? Like, they understand how to operate in that condition, but they also understand that condition is extremely dynamic and there's all kinds of crazy things coming at them. So.
Yeah, aviation, specifically in the military, may not be a perfect example to use in business. And the reason I say that is much of what you do is continuing to train for a combat situation and also for aircraft emergencies. Mm-hmm. Systems fail, engines fail, and you're constantly doing that. And so even though it's not predictable when that's going to occur, you are constantly trying to build skill sets so that you can combine them based off of your experience to better adapt to a brand new situation. What we would say is that, you know, obviously combat is very chaotic, and you know, as much chaos as there is in a wartime environment, there still are processes and procedures and SOPs and things that continue to operate. And so I think there are some aspects of that preparing for the unexpected that a business leader can still do. We don't want a leader to develop their experience and their skill set based on being immersed into difficulties, right? There are things that you can do to prepare for those difficulties, whether that is learning, as you mentioned, reading about different economic conditions and having discussions with peer groups and those sort of things. So there's this self-directed aspect. Experience can direct you to develop skill sets, like we said in that immersion scenario, but then there's a self-directed aspect of that. How am I going to develop myself to be better prepared for the conditions that are ahead of me? Some of that requires, as you mentioned, to get your head up and to look beyond and not just take for granted that it's always going to be the way it is right now. Things change quite frequently. And then, you know, so in the military, we're preparing for those situations that we can't define, but yet we're going to get as best prepared as we can. If you can take that into the business environment, then there should be some benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to spot patterns. And,
yes.
And we talk a lot about
yes.
that. And so, you know, my question back is, when does that, as a leader, when does that experience and even knowledge base create arrogance? I mean, you saw it as, obviously, with the amount of training, you still saw a lot of pilots who thought they had so much ability that they killed themselves and their crew.
Yeah.
In reality, not in a metaphor.
Well, it goes back to number one of the core four, humility, right? You've got to go back to those four, and that's why they're so important to our Helmwise methodology, the humility, the sacrifice, the stewardship, and the legacy. You've got to constantly keep those in. We say that one of the first things that we do when we go through that OR process is we evaluate the state of the captain first. How am I operating? Am I operating in humble why? Is my ego getting too big? Is it all about me? Then we talk about, you know, what is the state of the sea?
And that's what I'm getting at. Because if you, and just for the listeners, I mean, if you think about it, if you are not in a good state and you're trying to evaluate whether your ship, which was Scott's original question for today's, podcast, is that ship ready and prepared for the journey? And are you prepared to be the leader? Well, if you can't evaluate the ship and the potential journey and the crew you have, and instead you're so arrogant, I can make it with any ship and any crew.
Right.
You'll never get to question two, much less to thinking about whether you need to delegate some authority or bring some expertise on board or potentially even be humble enough to say, you know what, I'm moving to a board seat and Scott, you come run the business. It's not mine to run. And all of those things are on the table. But if you don't get your mind right, arrogance can get in the way. Another one that we have spoken about in here is that is the foolish consistency. So you also get so wed to this is, you know, I read a book, I went to business school. This is how you respond. Business schools are taking basically a metadata. So they're looking at lots of cases, trying to apply what happens in general across business to extract kind of patterns. And they are accurate. They are useful. But they may not be useful at all in the situation that's unique to you as the leader and you as the business. And so foolish consistency is, again, why I say your consistency has to go up like last episode. It has to go high enough up to where you are constantly looking at yourself, you know, your ship, which we're talking about, your crew, the sea conditions. Are you looking at the macroeconomics, the microeconomics, your actual industry, your cash flow, your leadership team? Is that good or service? You know, is that something where you've lost touch with your value proposition to the customers? You've lost the culture that your employees had? Has the market really changed? Sometimes it has, certainly with the pandemic and a lot of things that have happened over the last 5 years. So I don't think you'll get there. But self-discipline is a big part. And communication. So we're still going to screw this up. So talk about why communication. I mean, to me, even if we followed all the best practices, if you're not willing to, we just finished the session, if you're not willing to have an honest discussion with other people on your team and outside of your business, you still significantly increase the chance of failure, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we, in our ShipWorks methodology within the HelmWise cohort, we talked the most important element in it is communication. Right, you have to constantly keep people aware of not only why you're doing what you're doing, right, but how the left hand is helping or supporting the right hand. And oftentimes we assume people just know these things. And the larger your organization gets, the more difficult it is to keep everyone aligned. So part of our orient is, okay, where we're going. This is the right thing. We've done our analysis of the state of the captain. We've done our analysis of the state of the sea. Okay, we still are aligned with our North Star. We might have to move a little left, a little right based on the conditions, but we're still going in the right direction. The next piece of that puzzle, the A and OR, is align, which means I've got to now align all of the people who need to support us along that journey. And then finally, the R is reckon, mean let's embark on it and continue to make adjustments as we go. And the communication piece, often we assume everyone knows. We've been together. We've been a business for 10 years. Everyone knows what we're doing. Oh, we've been through this before. You can never assume people understand what's going on. Things are too dynamic. And what you don't want to do is have people make assumptions but then make the wrong one. And now that really hurts the business. And so setting expectations is part of that communication process. The thing that it reminded me when you were talking about, you know, how do we prepare for some of these things? And I was talking about things we did in the military and training and those sort of things is, you know, the use of what if scenarios, the use of drills, the use of checklists, the use of methodologies, the use of frameworks, all those things help try to guide you to ask the right questions at the right time so that you can make the proper decisions. So often we tend to kind of shoot from the hip, and we think that structure or process is a bad thing. It's constricting. But what we don't want to do is not consider a key element. One of the things we do in aviation, as everyone well knows, is we go through checklists, a start checklist, a shutdown checklist, an arming checklist. And so we don't forget things, even though we might have started the aircraft thousands of times, right? You can't get complacent in what you're doing. And sometimes you get distracted, something happens, and you forget a key step, and that causes a problem. And so as I was thinking about it, how do we apply that in the business sense? I'm not aware over the last, 40 years or so, working with companies who said, okay, let's do a drill, right? Let's just say that the boss didn't show up today. Maybe they won the lottery and they didn't show up for work, right? Can we function? Can we continue moving forward, right? Who is going to hold that team meeting? Who is going to set the direction for today? If we don't do that, we're just assuming that in an extremis that we're going to operate properly when we do have the opportunity to prepare for it.
Yeah, I wonder. So I like the idea of it, but I wonder if that event is going to trigger the people, the realization that your business and your people aren't the people to get through that next leg of the journey.
Yeah.
So how do you do, do you do that as a simulation in your mind? Or do you, I would wonder how many people I would want involved, I guess is really the question. Because if you know that person is a excellent motivator who runs process, who makes sure that we continue to deliver consistent performance in alignment with the scope and the, agreements that we have with customers or whatever it may be, and all that blows up,
mm-hmm.
is that person actually capable of the dynamic situation they're getting ready to be thrust into? And so would be involved, I guess, in that simulation in your mind?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking about this in real time. Because I would want to know about that sooner than later, right? I wouldn't want the situation to occur and then the person is woefully unprepared. If there were a way to hold some sort of scenario planning and a gap was discovered, that's the purpose of it, is discover the gap, fill the gap. Therefore, the ship is more seaworthy for different conditions. But if you don't put it through its tests, then you don't know whether or not you can pull it that way. One of the things that we talk about in the aircraft is flying the aircraft versus fighting the aircraft. Mm-hmm. And that's understanding both the aircraft's limitation and your limitations. And through a series of training, that's why you always start out with your 101 and work your way up through your higher level and more difficult training scenarios is to build some of that memory and some of that experience. But if we as a business aren't constantly stressing it or trying to stress it, then are we truly preparing our leaders, whether that's at the lowest levels or the highest levels, for these difficult times? In other words, we could be wasting runway. We could have situations right now, maybe the business is working well. We don't have a lot of crises. All right, so how can we best utilize the time that we have to help prepare us for a situation that may be around the corner? We don't know yet. We're going to wait until it surfaces, or are we going to test the company a little bit to see if it can withstand some variability? I don't know. I'm thinking about this in real time here. This is why I love the podcast.
No, this is actually how Scott and I converse fairly often, because my response would be, well, there's things that happen in a business, certainly where you change course, modify, mm-hmm. correct. You may make some drastic changes in what you're providing or product, then there is the reality of what actually puts businesses out of business is they run out of cash.
Okay.
So more often when it gets very serious, we'll continue on the ship metaphor, is whether it drafts too deep. So what I mean is the ship is too big, there's too much resource, too much weight on it,
right,
and it's going to
run aground. There you go. Yeah.
And so I just... gaming that out and being clear that major departments, major layoff, overhead, things like that would have to occur. There is a limit to how far I think that you could keep a healthy culture. Some people love ignorance is bliss, and so I don't think putting it 100% on the table is a great idea, which people may disagree. Everyone mm-hmm. always says share everything. I also see a lot today where, and plenty of evidence, you can go look up on how trigger warnings and things actually cause their own problems.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of data now on that. If you think I'm making it up, go look it up. Trigger warnings actually cause more stress about the stress that's going to happen in the future.
Right.
And so I would just caution to run those drills maybe at each layer and work your way down if appropriate. This may be a way you could deploy it without going into your office thinking, this is a great idea. What if 10 of our best clients left tomorrow, and then everybody looks around and says, well, they're gone. That's not going to build a lot of excitement. Now, you can use that drill at a high enough level to point out you need more diversity of clients, more diversity of things like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was thinking about initially, because you're right, it could be very disruptive. And I certainly wouldn't be an advocate to say, do this all the time. Otherwise, okay, what's going to break today, right? What simulated or real thing are they going to spring on us as we get into the workplace? But at the same time, I'm thinking there have been some things that we've even done internally. You look at our accountability chart. Right, so we follow EOS or parts of EOS here, and the accountability chart, we've always told our leaders, what's it look like if you expand? What's it look like if you have to contract? So think about that now and analyze your team and where you could, add people or where you need to subtract people, and then what are the triggers that are going to give you indicators that you may need to expand and or contract? I think that's a good use of the time, of the resources, of evaluating where you are, where you potentially could go, or what happens if adversity shows up in your organization. I don't think, at least the businesses I've been in, both large, medium, and small, have done a lot of that, right? There hasn't been a lot of this scenario planning. And maybe there can be more. Not that we would spend all our time doing it, but certainly it should be something that the leader should be concerned about. We talk about exit planning. So eventually, the business is going, the owner is going to exit the business. One of the things that really hurts them in exiting the business is the business can't be transferable. In other words, it's so dependent upon them that the value can't be unlocked, and it's not very attractive to a buyer. Because once you remove the owner, then the business can't continue to function and produce the revenue and the profitability that it once did. And so this sort of action we're talking about starts to decouple that, going, wait a minute. Yeah, what happens if you as the CEO weren't available for 3 weeks, right? Could the business still make the right decisions to move forward? And if it can't, all right, then what are the things that we need to do? Who do we need to train? What are the processes we need to do? What interactions do we need to ensure that people are thinking in the right way to keep the business from running aground? And I think if we did more of that, we probably would be better prepared for some bumps in the C-state. But more importantly, if you did that, you're probably better preparing your business for an exit. If and when you choose, that could be decades from now. But now at least the business is ready, and you don't have to suddenly, refit the ship in order to get it available to put on the market.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple other more positive ways you can do it. Just thinking through it as we're talking is, micro projects and assignments.
There you go.
So how do you allow employees to continue in your team to continue to expand their capabilities and recognize their shortcomings potentially is, a miniature version of a startup is I want you to get on this team and I want you to plan a new creative way to have a celebration party. Like you come up with it, kind of see where they go, if they can actually adapt to something that has little instruction and kind of a big goal, but not a lot of direction. You can do it that way. Certainly one of the things we do and most companies do is a version of a Working Genius that Scott brought up or a culture index. Maxwell's disc that you like. I mean, there's ways to try to start figuring out which players will enjoy it. The big warning there is, which is actually a big positive of Working Genius and culture index, is that doesn't mean they're not great at it. And so you still have to test it out. They could be great at areas they don't enjoy doing. And so you can't be dogmatic in how you apply those types of scenarios and test on people, because they may be excellent under fire doing things that they generally don't like doing.
Yes, I was also thinking there are opportunities usually in larger enterprise. GE was famous for this, is that, you know, as you work your way up through the hierarchy of a big organization, you're also often moved from place to place to get different experiences, right? Hey, maybe you're leading operations and then you're going to do a stint in finance, and then maybe do a stint in marketing. And it was all to try to give this more well-roundedness of all the aspects of business. And, you know, even within an enterprise, a small enterprise, how often or how familiar are we with how things get done in other parts of the business? One of the things that we speak a lot about is emotional intelligence and empathy, right? How better to understand than spending a little bit of time actually trying to do that function? If I look across my career, I think at last count, it was 15 or 16 different functional areas that I had worked in, which gives me a good appreciation of how things connect. We call it system thinking. It's really not the individual pieces, it's the interfaces of the pieces that are most important to the business. Again, are those things that if you've got runway and if you are thinking proactively, there are experiences that you could give your next level leaders that now make them more capable to function in an extremis, because maybe it's the someone in accounting that's not available and someone can step in. Even though it's not their genius, they can step in and have a better plug and play than you would if you didn't prepare for it.
And, you know, a company that has obviously become one of the wealthiest private companies in the world, Koch Industries, does it kind of opposite of that.
Yeah. So
they actually take the person who's best in the position they they're in, and their pay is determined by their contribution, not by the band and management. So they got people who are lower who get paid way more than their bosses in all kinds of departments because their output is extremely valuable. And so they run a kind of a different approach, I think, a mix like most things. And if you're listening to this thinking, man, they're all over the place, it is certainly one of the thesis of being wise, that there's no one right answer. We talked about it a lot.
That's the first thing I just wrote down. Exactly right.
You know, if you're going, they say go like GE and then run tests, but don't run tests and go here, go there. That, you know, this is where we go back to Aristotle and the golden mean, is it's somewhere in the middle and the conditions change. And as the leader, again, this goes all the way back to the start of the conversation, are you humble enough and do you have enough people around you and your leadership team humble enough to go, hey, this is working, but now it's not working, or we need a little more of this and a little more of that. The idea that you're going to get it exactly right, again, is to me your one of your key indicators that whoever's telling you that's exactly how to do it, you should probably not take the information, don't take the advice, I guess, is the way I would look at that.
Yeah, and I appreciate you mentioning that, because it's something that has been the hallmark of HelmWise, is that there is no one right answer. Because even if we could execute perfectly, that doesn't mean that the conditions are going to be perfect tomorrow. And so we talk about our core discipline of asking the right question at the right time, at the right depth. But that question is only good for that period of time, because then things start to change. The C-state changes, the leadership changes, economic conditions change. And so I think what we're trying to, at least I hope that we're trying to get across to our listeners, is that there's no one answer to this. It isn't that you should follow sort of this, hey, go out and test everyone mentality that I was just talking about. And you've got others who are very much specialist driven. You've got the whole debate around specialist versus generalists and what's the right thing. I think what we are advocating here at HelmWise is the fact that you need to dabble in all these things, be aware, have awareness of all these things, and figure out whether or not what combination works best for you as a captain and works best for you and your crew and works best for your ship. But if you don't do those things, if you aren't expanding your learning, if you aren't expanding your knowledge base, then everything's going to look like a nail. Right. And so all you're going to go around with your hammer, when in reality, it should be you need a screwdriver. And you just
flip to the next best leadership book I read this.
Yes.
Month. And
exactly
I read another
right.
one next year. Exactly and right. I read another one 2 years from now. Yeah. And so, you know, I think we advocate, do you have a consistent approach to how you evaluate yourself, your C-state, your crew, your company, and the situation. If you consistently can kind of go through that analysis, then you can decide which areas you need more, to your point, left pedal, right pedal. Do I need to get a little more prescriptive in the way I lead people, or do I need to be more creative in open environment? Because we're at a point where, you know, maybe I don't have the answers. Well, I need everyone in here to be very creative. If you think you have the answer and it's an emergency situation, you're not usually doing your hands this way. You're doing your hands, you do that, and we need to move. So time, pace, the situation affects all that. And being uber rigid at the wrong level, which is why we end that progression with depth, is a very bad idea. If you're launching a rocket for SpaceX, you need to be very detailed and very prescriptive all the way down to the last, you know, little bit, I'm sure. But when you're designing that and laying out the mission and thinking about it before the rocket's launching, they probably need to be a lot higher level thinking and a lot more creative. And so it's not one answer. It's just, how do you approach it? But I would say, if you don't start with humility and looking at yourself, you'd better hope you figure you calculate it correctly in all aspects, and nothing changes between when you calculate it and when you go. And that just rarely happens.
Roger that. So bring it full circle. You know, we kind of kicked off the podcast talking about that one piece of eight. Are the captain and the ship the right match for the journey? And even though that seems to be a yes or no question, there are a lot of variables that are in there that need to be considered from a captain standpoint, from the ship standpoint, and even what is the journey? What is it going to require? So I'd like to wrap it up there, Chandler. What I like about the podcast is we can take a topic and then suddenly wander around and add different elements to it. I appreciate your insights. Like I said, there's no one answer, but the more that we can educate people and give them that guidance and that wisdom, hopefully the better captains are going to be to guide their ship to the next destination.
Well, thank you, Scott. I enjoy our conversations, and hopefully the listeners enjoy our conversations as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all. See you on the next episode of the Powerhouse Perspective. Cheers.
Take care.